Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the growing alarm expressed by the White House that the besieged Assad clan in Syria might soon use chemical weapons against their own people. Rafif Jujati, the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, the umbrella group of activists inside of Syria fighting to overthrow the regime, joins us to discuss the likely response if the regime crosses that red line. Then we'll look into the politics of the so-called fiscal cliff following the Republican counteroffer to the president's proposal. Jeff Madrick, who writes a column on economics for Harper's Magazine and is the author of Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America 1970 to the Present, joins us to discuss the absurd theatrics surrounding the phony urgency of going over a mythical cliff while the real issues facing the economy are not being addressed by the press or our politicians. Then finally, we'll discuss Israel's announcement of 3,000 more settlements on the West Bank and Hillary Clinton's appearance at a pro-Israel forum over the weekend where, according to a provocative new article by The New Yorker editor David Remnick, she appeared to be laying the groundwork for a presidential run in 2016. Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, Stephen Walt, joins us to discuss the latest display of fealty to Israel while Prime Minister Netanyahu again pokes America's president in the eye. And joining us now is Rafif Jujati, who is an English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committee, the umbrella group of activists inside of Syria. She's a Syrian and American activist in the Washington, D.C. area and helps organize protests, workshops, and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events inside Syria. Welcome to Background Briefing, Rafif Jujati.
Thank you for having me.
And I know you've been in Syria and in the neighborhood a lot, and you're back in the U.S. So tell us about what's happening now, as much as you understand, with the Free Syrian Army closing in on Damascus, closing the airport there. It does seem as if the Assad regime is under increasing siege, and the U.S. government has now issued grave warnings that they're concerned that the embattled Assad regime may resort to the use of chemical weapons. What's your understanding in terms of, as a Syrian activist, of that possibility?
Well, certainly we have seen the Assad regime moving its chemical weapons around, and we know full well that the regime that has not hesitated to kill upwards of 40,000 people will not hesitate to destroy the entire country and the region as well. But with the Free Syrian Army gains and what we've seen in terms of recent defections, I think we can begin the countdown to the inevitable collapse of the Assad regime. I would say it's on its last legs.
And the defections, of course, a prominent defection just took place with a spokesperson, the government spokesperson for the Syrian Foreign Ministry. That's the latest, right?
Yes, apparently he is now in London, and he has defected. Of course, regime supporters are saying that he was fired for shoplifting several years ago when he was a diplomat in a foreign country. This, again, feeds into the silly rhetoric of the regime. But in addition to Mr. Makdisi's defection, all last week we saw defectors at basically every checkpoint along the road to Damascus International Airport. We've also seen defectors in different parts of Syria, and those defections have greatly helped the Free Syrian Army in liberating checkpoints and air bases.
So, Rafif Jujati, what do we know about the dispersal of these chemical weapons? We know that Syria has the largest chemical arsenal in the Middle East, and it's supposed to be, I've heard figures of 24 sites up to 42 sites. When the U.S. makes these warnings that they're increasingly concerned about the Assad regime resorting to the use of its chemical arsenals against its own people, and today at the White House, the president warned the Assad regime in Syria not to cross that red line. So I guess what's implied here is that, in fact, it's more than implied. The U.S. has earlier said that that is a red line. So if Assad uses these weapons, does that automatically mean the U.S. intervenes?
Well, I would think that if the Assad regime chooses to launch chemical weapons at its own people, This will have ripple effects throughout the region. I believe that once chemical weapons are launched, you really can't contain them or contain their consequences. So I would expect the United States and other members of the international community to take very swift action to prevent as much damage as possible. I also wouldn't be surprised to see a preemptive strike
by the U.S. against what would be the point of blowing up chemical arsenals? I mean, you'd have to secure them, wouldn't you, not blow them up?
I am actually not a chemical weapons expert, so I really couldn't tell you with any degree of accuracy. But I imagine a preemptive strike would be to accelerate the dismantling of the regime as opposed to blowing up installations.
So given that the U.S. has already issued this red line over the use of chemical weapons, and now the U.S. expressing grave concerns that the likelihood of the use is increasing as the Assad regime crumbles and gets more paranoid and more desperate, my understanding is that the Pentagon has done some war games on this, and this may require up to 100,000 U.S. troops to be deployed. And we know that the U.S. public is not happy about any more entanglements in the Middle East. So just practically speaking, what do you think could happen here if that line is crossed?
Well, certainly I've heard talk about contingency plans and different wargaming scenarios on the part of the Pentagon, and I think these had started some time ago. The Assad regime's brutality and unwillingness to find any sort of political solution to this has been well documented throughout the nearly 2 years of revolution. Now, I understand that in the United States there absolutely is no appetite to committing additional troops to yet another war. I'm hoping that it will not come to this, but I think regional allies also need to step up. The Saudis and the Qataris and the Turks have long been making a lot of noise about the Syrian revolution and about their desire for Assad to step down, so perhaps they could also be effective players in the region. Another area of concern or warning to the Assad regime is the fact that Turkey is expected to receive NATO approval to deploy Patriot missiles along its borders with Syria.
Well, but Turkey's basically taken a defensive stance. We're talking about an offensive stance here that would be necessary. You suggested maybe the first foreign intervention involving NATO or the U.S. or both would involve some kind of strike against the regime. My understanding is that way back when Sarkozy was still in power, he and the Saudi defense minister weighed in on the White House, and they wanted to blow up the Assad palace outside of Damascus on the mountain there, and that was vetoed. What's your understanding of what it would take in terms of a preemptive strike against this regime?
Well, I fundamentally believe you take out Assad and his immediate circle of mafioso, and you put an end to three-quarters of the problem in Syria. So, in my mind, a preemptive strike would involve taking out Assad and that small collection of individuals that are making the decisions to kill.
And there would be what? What would be the day after that scenario?
Well, I think the day after, I mean, we can joke about it a little bit. I think the day after will be a lot of celebration across the country. Now, certainly, Syria might experience a period of chaos as we transition. I don't believe there is any transition that is completely clean and not messy. But I think that the will of the Syrian people would have been done, and I think we can move into a democratic state over time. I believe we can implement the rule of law and make sure it applies equally to all citizens. And I know that the average Syrian is moderate, believes in a civil society and a civil state, and does not want to further disrupt our rich cultural and religious heritage.
Again, I'm speaking with Rafif Jujati, who's the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, which is the umbrella group of activists inside Syria. She's a Syrian-American activist in the Washington, D.C. area and helps organize protests, workshops, and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events in Syria. Now, obviously, the Assad regime, its support comes from the Alawite community. My understanding is that they're paranoid and retreating into the northwestern mountain area, you know, for a last stance. So when you say that the day after the Assad's fall, if indeed either the Free Syrian Army takes out the regime or there is a strike on the part of, say, the United States to remove this mafia group, which I think you accurately described them as a mafia family. They've treated this country for the last 50 years as their own private plantation. But there's got to be a lot of sense of revenge on the part of those who have been murdered and who have been brutalized by 50 years of Assad's Muhabarat, his vicious secret police, and the more recent killings of up to 50,000 people. You're suggesting no revenge, no retribution?
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. There, I'm sure, will be revenge killings. I'm sure there will be retribution. But I do believe that with adequate support from the international community, we can help people process actually prosecutions in a courts of law. I think we can be better positioned to distinguish between those with blood on their hands and those who had no choice but to support the regime out of fear for their own lives and their families' lives. I do want to clarify one thing. The Alawi community in Syria is deeply divided over Assad, with a great many Alawis refusing to accept him as a leader. Assad himself has proven that he is non-sectarian in that he targets anybody and everybody who stands in his way. He has jailed and killed hundreds, if not thousands, of Alawis. The same applies to our Christian Syrians and the Druze and the Kurds. And so really what you have is a popular revolution that in which the there was at one time a silent majority. Many of those Syrian silents were made up of minority communities, but I think that balance has shifted tremendously in the last few weeks.
So you don't expect a Balkanized Syria where the Alawis retreat to their ancestral mountains and the country is divided and broken up?
Well, certainly that is always a possibility, but I really don't think it will happen. For one thing, Syrians are united in their desire for the Assad regime to go away and to implement a system of democracy. Second of all, I don't think an Alawite state could be sustainable by any means. I mean, how would they defend themselves? They would be a tiny sliver of a country. And I think the vast majority of Syrians don't want to see their country divided any more so than Assad has already divided it.
So, Rafish Jujadi, again, the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committee, is the umbrella group of activists inside of Syria. When we see footage of the Free Syrian Army, and they've definitely been under-equipped, under-armed, and against a very, very powerful military, which they seem to have gradually been eroding the power of the Assad military machine. Nevertheless, the footage we see of the fighters usually are young guys, often with the kind of the beard, which is a symbol of the jihadis, if you will, shouting Allah Akbar. So what's going on here? Is that selective use of footage or is that something that we should be alarmed about in the sense that the vanguard of the Free Syrian Army appear to be these young Islamists?
Well, it's maybe a yes and yes type of answer. Now, for one thing, on the very surface of it, the Free Syrian Army fighters don't necessarily have access to razors, nor do they have time to be shaving and grooming. They are fighting against a regime that has declared war on its own people. Now, there are jihadists inside Syria. Many of them are foreigners who have come in and are trying to declare Islamic jihad. So we cannot deny the fact that these people are present. We also cannot deny the fact that their agenda is very different from that of the Syrian people. So while these groups have taken up arms and while they are organized and fighting alongside the Free Syrian Army. We also know that the vast majority of Syrians do not want this and far outnumber any Islamic jihadists. Syrians, by nature, are relatively secular. I would say the majority are moderate conservatives, but with full respect for other religious communities, with full respect for the law. So these Islamic jihadists who are there now, I think, pose a danger initially, but I think they will clear out. In terms of the footage of men with beards, again, they don't necessarily have the time to engage in personal grooming, and many may be simply responding to the desires of their funders. The Free Syrian Army is going to turn to whichever government funds them and provides them with the weapons they need. And so if the call is for some Islamist state, they may very well respond to that simply to achieve their goals, which is to topple the Assad regime.
So are you saying, Rashid Shujadi, that since a lot of the sponsorship comes from Saudi Arabia, which is a fairly fundamentalist regime, is that what the Saudis want? Do they want a pluralistic, free Syria, or do they want a regime like the one they have in Saudi Arabia that's dominated by the Wahhabi religious sect?
Well, I think the funding that's coming from Saudi Arabia that specifically supports Islamist groups comes from individuals and not necessarily the Saudi government. With regard to Saudi interests in Syria, I don't believe the Saudis want to impose a form of government, but I do believe they are committed to seeing the overthrow of the Assad regime.
And as you were saying earlier, Rafif Shahjadi, you think that's happening. I mean, I've talked to a lot of U.S. experts on Syria, and they've suggested that this could take a long time, and this will be a very painful and brutal reckoning because of the nature of the Assad regime and because of the fact that, frankly, the West has been very reluctant to arm the Free Syrian Army, and none of the major powers have really stepped forth, although the French appear to be moving in that direction. So just in closing, you're suggesting this is happening pretty much now, that this regime may be on its last legs. So has the fact that the West hasn't really supported the Free Syrian Army, do you think that the West will pay a price? Is there a lot of bitterness towards the West in terms of the sacrifices that the Free Syrian Army have had to make in this asymmetrical battle that they've engaged in?
Well, certainly there's a fair amount of bitterness. I mean, Syrians have been shouting and literally dying for freedom, dignity, human rights. These are more or less Western concepts. And the very perpetrators of those Western concepts are not stepping up to help them. So certainly there is some level of bitterness. I think what this means is after the liberation of Syria is perhaps diminished influence in the region. And it's a shame because Syrians were calling for what we in the West enjoy as a matter of fact. And I think the international community has had tremendous opportunities to help guide or shape the future of Syria in responding to what Syrians want. With regard to this being a long and messy, protracted crisis, yes, some aspects will be long. Transition is never clean. But I think overwhelmingly Syrians want to transition to a stable and secure country where they are all equals under the law, where there is a system of democracy, where there is not a system of nepotism and cronyism. And I think eventually the will of the Syrian people will be realized.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Rafif Shahjadi.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Rafif Shahjadi, who is the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, the umbrella group of activists inside Syria. She's a Syrian-American activist in the Washington, D.C. area, and the Syrian Local Coordination Committees help organize protests, workshops, and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events inside of Syria. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the bogus fiscal cliff.
يلا ارحل يا بشار يلا ارحل يا بشار ويلا ارحل يا بشار يلا